Don't go mad.
You've been listening to an interview recorded on June 15, 2005 with Umberto Eco, who died February 19, 2016 at the age of 84. An extended version of this interview can be found at Radio Walensky in the Area 9401 section of the kpfa.org website. I'm Richard Walensky on Bookwaves.
Bookwaves is produced by Richard Walensky in the studios of KPFA Pacifica Radio.
A new vaudevillian tradition, March 13th at 7 p.m. at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven in Portland. Oddville, a new vaudevillian tradition, is a brand new variety show style monthly night, taking cues from vaudevillian traditions and narrative comedy. Each month's showcase features a different lineup of performers, bringing together a wide range of artistic disciplines and focusing on polished short pieces from our thriving clown, circus, vaudevillian, and alternative performance communities right here in Portland. Again, that's Oddville, March 13th at 7 p.m. at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven, 1464 Southeast 2nd Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the Worldbeat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
Last time I was home to see my mother, we kissed, exchanged pleasantries and unpleasantries, poured a warm, comforting silence around us, and read separate books. I remember the first time I consciously saw her. We were living in a three-room apartment on Burns Avenue. Mommy always sat in the dark. I don't know how I knew that, but she did. That night, I stumbled into the kitchen. Maybe because I've always been a night person, or perhaps because I had wet the bed. She was sitting on a chair. The room was bathed in moonlight diffused through tiny window panes. She may have been smoking, but maybe not. Her hair was three-quarters her height, which made me a strong believer in the Samson myth and very black. I'm sure I just hung there by the door, and I remember thinking, what a beautiful lady. She was very deliberately waiting, perhaps for my father to come home from his night job, or maybe for a dream that had promised to come by. Come here, she said, I'll teach you a poem. I see the moon sees me. God bless the moon and God bless me. I taught that to my son, who recited it for her, just to say we must learn to bear the pleasures as we have borne the pains.
Good morning, and welcome to the March edition of Black Book Talk. This is Patricia Welch, the Library Lady.
And O.B. Hill with Reflections Mirror Image Books.
And joining us from a remote location, I believe, is Emma Jackson Ford. Emma, are you online?
I'm online. Good morning.
Okay, we opened with Nikki Giovanni, Poetess Supreme, who was reading the poem Mother, and that's from a pretty old album called From a Ripple to a Stream. No, I'm sorry, Like a Ripple on a Stream. Of course, maybe it's Pond. I'll look that up and call it back into the station. But it's just full of absolutely beautiful poetry backed by just a wonderful choir. This is Women's History Month, and part of the day we'll just be talking about books by and about Black women. OB?
Well, the first book I would like to talk about is When Marion Sang. And this is a children's book by Pam M. Ryan. And pictures by Brian Selznick. Beautiful book, award-winning book. And I really just appreciate the illustrations in it. And it won some awards from it. Beautiful drawings. And I wanted to read it a little bit from it here. No one was surprised when Marion loved to sing. After all, she listened to her father singing in the morning as he dressed. Mother often hummed while she worked in the kitchen. Sometimes Marion and her little sisters, Ethel, May, and Assie, sang songs all afternoon. Let us break bread together on our knees. Let us break bread together on our knees. When we fall on our knees with our face to the rising sun, O Lord, have mercy on me. This is a great book, a beautiful read, and it's signed by the author. And then I brought some information on Marian Anderson, and it's just something that we all need to be able to understand. Now, Mary Anderson was born on February the 17th, 1902, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and she studied voice privately in Philadelphia, New York, and Europe, etc., etc. Great, great book.
Emma, got something you want to share?
Yes, I do. But I want to say that I didn't bring anything for our Women's History Month. I brought something instead from last month, things I did with the students. I wanted them to meet some African Americans that they had not met before or didn't know anything about. So one of the books I did was The Last Black King of the Kentucky Derby. It is a book about Jimmy Wingfield. Jimmy Wingfield was born in 1874 in Kentucky, and he grew up to be a jockey, and he won 68 races in 1 year. He married a Russian princess and came back to live. No, I'm incorrect. He married a Russian duchess, and he came back to live in the U.S. in Ohio, and had children, and his descendants still live there to this day. He was the last African-American jockey to win the Kentucky Derby, and he won it 3 times. The name of the book is The Last Black King of the Kentucky Derby. It's by Crystal Hubbard, and it's illustrated by Robert McGuire.
Because a lot of people are, you know, aware that this is Women's History Month and they're coming into libraries and other areas and they're looking for books on women, I just wanted to share one or two references that people can come to and find out information about a number of women. I'm looking at Black Women in America, second edition, and I have volume 2. The editor for this book is Darlene Clark Hine. That's H-I-N-E. It is published by Oxford University Press. This three-part encyclopedia has information on specific women, but as it is an encyclopedia, it also covers other subjects. For instance, the second volume starts with H, and the first thing is hair. I'll just read a few sentences from this first entry. For African-American women, hair has long been entwined with issues of beauty, class, cultural acceptance, and citizenship. Depending on the historical period, the texture of hair may tell a story about how an African-American woman feels about herself in relation to the prevailing standards of beauty. Its care might provide an opportunity to become economically self-sufficient, and its styling could speak to political beliefs and ideologies. It continues from there to a section on early hair and beauty practices, 19th century beauty advertisements, 20th century African-American women advertising beauty, natural hairstyles and political protest, contemporary African women's hair, 1980 to the present. This is a scholarly work, so at the end of each article, there is a bibliography, and there are also references to related items. For instance, it says, see also Beauty Culture and Madam C.J. Walker. And there are wonderful photographs throughout. There's another section on jazz, and it goes from the origin of jazz, talks a lot about it, and then they have what are called featured sections. So, for instance, there's one that says featuring jazz instrumentalists and band leaders, and it goes from, Lil Hardin Armstrong, 1898 to 1971, Emma Barrett, 1898 to 1983. And of course, there are contemporary jazz artists like Jerry Allen, 1959. So there are these special areas. There's another one on just jazz singers, everybody from Ernestine Anderson, 1928 to Betty Carter. Some names I'm not familiar with, Helen Humes, 1913 to 1981, of course, Ella Fitzgerald. But just a variety of articles, variety of perspectives on African American in this country. Another featured section featuring women in the military. Again, this is a reference book if you're interested in finding out something about a wide variety of African American women. Black Women in America, edited by Darlene Hine.
Well, that sounds like a very interesting read. I must try to get hold of that myself. The one book I want to talk about, and is very interesting here, is The Images of America, African Americans of Portland. And this is Oregon Black Pioneers, Kimberly Storl Moreland. Very, very nice book, illustrated with all types of historical knowledge on a variety of people and subjects. And in here, there's a couple of people I want to recognize. Both of them are female politicians. The first one, and I'm just going to read from this book. In 1984, Margaret Carter became the first African-American woman elected to the Oregon House of Representatives, and she was later elected to the Oregon State Senate in 2000. In the House of Representatives, she worked on passed legislation that endorsed state-controlled investments in South Africa and sponsored legislation to observe Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday as a state holiday. And in 2009, she was appointed by Governor Ted Kulongoski as Deputy Director for Human Services Programs at the Oregon Department of Human Services. And due to her long-standing commitment to education, the Portland Community College, that's PCC Skills Center and Technology Education Building, was named in her honor. And that's courtesy of the Portland Community College, and that's located on the corner of North Killensworth and Albina Street. And secondly, Abel Gardley. She served in the Oregon State Legislature from 1991 to 2008. After serving their terms in House, she was elected to Oregon's first African-American state senator in 1996. In 2000, Senator Gardley was the chief practitioner for a constitutional amendment that removed racial language from Oregon's constitution. Other legislation that she sponsored included creating the Governor's Environmental Justice Task Force and creating the statewide Office of Multicultural Health. And she retired from the position in 2008. And this is courtesy of Abel Gardley, who I happen to go to Portland State with. I don't know exactly what that was, but whatever it is, this book is Images Images of African Americans of Portland. Very, very good read.
Okay, sorry about that. I am coming to you from the library today, our school library, and the PA system suddenly boomed with the secretary calling for someone, and that's what you heard. I tried to put it on mute, but not fast enough. So, as I said, I'm doing books from that I did last month here, and my next book is Piano Starts Here, The Young Art Tatum by Robert Andrew Parker. It's written from the point of view of the young Art Tatum. So it sounds something like this. By the way, this book would make a perfect gift for a youngster. The cover has a little boy at the piano. It's blue with the black and white piano keys. Great looking book. It starts with, "This is the house in Toledo where I was born, and the art is in watercolor. This is my father. He is a mechanic. This is my mother. She often sings in the church down the street, but she isn't singing here. She has too much work to do. One day, I can reach the keyboard on tiptoe. I play with one finger, then two fingers, then my fists and hands. My mother says, that sounds nice. Do that again. And I do until she says, enough now. Why don't you go play while it's still light outside? And then it tells us about his eyesight. As I get older, my eyesight gets worse. An operation helps, but just a little. Still, bad eyes can't keep me from playing the piano. My hands get to know the keys, the short black ones on top and the long white ones below. I play more and more and more. One summer evening, when it's too hot to even turn on the lights, my parents sit on the porch, swing with my little brother and sister. The neighborhood children run around catching lightning bugs in mayonnaise jars. As their jars grow brighter, they hear my music pouring out of the window. I play Moonlight Bay and Shine On Harvest Moon, all the moon songs that I can hear of, that I can think of. My, my, isn't that something, my mother says, into the night. For those of you who don't know, Art Tatum was a famous piano player who had Bad Eyesight, but Still Come Young Art Tatum by Robert Andrew Parker.
Okay, you know, historical figures are not important. Historical figures are not always the names that we all know, that we see in every book, that we hear about in every annual historical holiday, but sometimes the people who have made the most impact are the ones that only a few people know. But their stories are important. And I'm looking at a book called The Girls Are Coming. It was published in 1999. The author's name is Peggy Carlson. Peggy Carlson was a college-educated young woman living in Minneapolis who started working as a pipe fitter for Minnegasco, a Minnesota natural gas utility. She was one of the first four women hired by the company into non-secretarial jobs after the passage of the Equal Employment Opportunity Act of 1972. On the job, she and Sonny, who was another of the first four, met men who were hostile, men who were helpful, and men who were simply flummoxed to find girls in their midst. So long as the guy does his job, one told, it don't matter to me if he's a gal. I want to just read a little quote from this book. Get me that thing. Excuse me? That thing, you know, that thing that goes like this? I stared at Elmo. He waved five greasy fingers in the air. They looked like tree roots. I had no idea what he wanted. We were bent over a maze of pipes in the boiler room of the Linden Building, a mile west of downtown Minneapolis. Elmo was the foreman, and I was his gopher. He was the pipe fitter, I the apprentice. I had been an apprentice for 15 minutes and was already doubting that I would ever be a pipe fitter. Could you give me a clue, I asked, wondering how he expected me to know what a ting was. I was black, female, and unfamiliar with the intricacies of the Scandinavian working man's dialect. You know, we now see a lot of women who are working in the trades, but we forget there's always a first. It wasn't accepted. It wasn't commonplace. And for many women then, and perhaps still now, it was very difficult. There are probably still men who are welcoming, men who are wondering, and men who are unwelcoming. So just in terms of what it was like for the women who were on the first, you know, on the front lines of this movement, I think this is a great book. Again, it's called The Girls Are Coming, written by Peggy Carlson, that's C-A-R-L-S-O-N.
You're listening to the March edition of Black Book Talk on KBOO. Emma, do you have another book there?
I do. I introduced the students to John Coltrane last month.
All right.
There's this beautiful book called Before John was a Jazz Giant. It's by Carol Boston Weatherford, and it's illustrated by Sean Qualls. It's all about John Coltrane as a small child. Young John Coltrane was all ears, and there was a lot to hear growing up in the South during the 1930s. Church songs, preachers praying, music on the radio, the bustling of the household. John was surrounded by all kinds of vivid noises that shaped his own sound as a musician. With vibrant words and glowing colors, Carol Boston Weatherford, she introduces him to children. The language is simple. I think even a kindergartner could understand this. The words are big on the page, and the illustrations are just dreamy. Sometimes she puts only six words on a page, like, Before John was a jazz giant. It's very large on the page, and she has John Coltrane playing his horn. He heard ham bones knocking in his grandmother's pots, Daddy strumming the ukulele, and Mama cranking the phonograph. And so she introduces us to the family. John Coltrane was a wonderful musician who some of our students haven't heard his music. So I played a little bit of his music, and I have no doubt that I will have lots of students who will be checking this book out. Again, it is Before John Was a Jazz Giant. It's by Carol Boston Weatherford, and it's illustrated by Sean Qualls. And it received the Coretta Scott King Award.
Well, these awards are very, very interesting. I have a book here that is one winner of multiple awards by Doreen Rappaport and illustrated by Brian Collier. It's called Martin's Big Words. Here again, this is a children's book too, but I bring this book to your attention not only because of Martin Luther King, but because of what happened in 1955 in Montgomery, Alabama. And Montgomery, Alabama happens to be the place where my mother was born. So let me read as follows. In 1955, on a cold December day in Montgomery, Alabama, Rosa Parks was coming home from work. A white man told her to get up from her seat on the bus so he could sit. She said no and was arrested. Montgomery's black citizens learned of her arrest, and it made them angry. They decided not to ride the bus until they could sit down anywhere they wanted. For 361 days, they walked to work and school and church. They walked in rain and cold and in the blistering heat. Martin walked with them and talked with them and sang with them and prayed with them until the white city leaders had to agree. They could sit down anywhere they wanted. When the history books are written, someone will say, there lived black people who had the courage to stand up for their rights. Very, very interesting book.
It is. You know something, before this program is over, I just want to make sure I've given out some correct information. The selection from Nikki Giovanni was from, when I purchased it, it was an LP, so you know how long ago this was. This is 1973. Now, I'm sure you can get it, you know, online streaming or whatever, but it is called Like a Ripple on a Pond, and it is Nikki Giovanni, and her poetry is accompanied by the music of the New York Community Choir, and they are excellent. Okay, for my perhaps last comments this morning, you know, I just wanted to highlight some things that people hadn't thought about. And I was looking through books, and I saw Asada, which is the autobiography of Asada Shakur. But I also saw Afeni Shakur, Evolution of a Revolutionary. And I just think that there are probably people who get confused about these two, because sometimes I have to stop and go, okay, which is which? So Asada, an autobiography, which, you know, is just like must reading for anybody who is interested in the history of African Americans, not just women, history of African Americans in this country, especially in terms of African Americans in struggle. This is the autobiography of Black Panther Asada Shakur. In 1973, she was shot, was in the hospital, came out, was imprisoned because of the accusation that she was involved in the shooting of a white state trooper. She was incarcerated for 4 years prior to her conviction in 1977. She was in jail for a few years. I can't say offhand how many, but no, I'm sorry, I can. 2 years after her conviction, she escaped from prison. She was given political asylum by Cuba, where, as far as I've heard, she now resides. So, okay, Asada Shakur, Black Panther, in Cuba now. This is with a foreword by Angela Davis. And then there's Afeni Shakur, Evolution of a Revolutionary, which was written by Jasmine Guy, known to many as Whitley on the TV show about black students in college, which is a spinoff from The Cosby Show. And if anybody knows the name, please tell me. But A Different World. But at any rate, this is about Tupac Shakur's mother, who was also a member of the Black Panthers. And again, a very political person. Unfortunately, she too was incarcerated and in fact was pregnant with Tupac while she was incarcerated. So this talks about her life, but understanding the political views of his mother, you can see why Tupac was actually a very political young man. And I give Jasmine Guy all credit, because she's been working on this for a long time and sort of tracing this woman's life and wanting to share this information. So again, Afeni Shakur, Evolution of a Revolutionary by Jasmine Guy, and Asada, an autobiography by Asada Shakur with a foreword by Angela Davis. Okay.
You've been listening to Black Book Talk, and this is the March edition 2016. To all ladies and gentlemen, bye-bye.
Okay, this is Patricia Welch, Library Lady, saying farewell, good reading until next month.
And Emma Jackson Ford saying, see you in April.
Deep river, my home is all.
to cross over into Cab Ground. Oh, don't you want to go to that gospel feast, that the promised land where all is peace?
Deep River, my home is
the last time I was home to see my mother, we kissed, exchanged pleasantries and unpleasantries, poured a warm, comforting silence around us, and read separate books. I remember the first time I consciously saw her. We were living in a three-room apartment on Burns Avenue. Mommy always sat in the dark. I don't know how I knew that, but she did. That night, I stumbled into the kitchen. Maybe because I've always been a night person, or perhaps because I had wet the bed. She was sitting on a chair. The room was bathed in moonlight diffused through tiny window panes. She may have been smoking, but maybe not.